halfway to the Higgs. If you're all wired up. Our first question is for Campbell.
Hi, Sarah Campbell, Columbia University. I noticed at the end of your talk, you had a slide where you showed the different Higgs decay measurements, and then the significance that you projected and the significance that you obtained. And yeah. One of them, the Higgs ZZ to 4 lepton, had something like 6 sigma projected and 8 sigma obtained. And I just wanted to know what you did to get that extra 2 sigma.
So maybe...
Or was it the, something different about
that? Can I jump fast to that? That's a question. Yeah. Okay. Let's go very fast. We're getting there. Okay. This year.
Yeah.
So what are you worried about? You are worried about this year.
Well, maybe I'm jealous, but So yeah, what'd you do to get that improvement?
Well, it's just a question of statistics in this particular case, okay. Because the number in the 4 lepton channel, actually the number of events we see is still very low. Is something of the order of 30 in each of the experiments. So clearly you are exposed to large statistical fluctuations. I mean, that's essentially the answer in this particular case.
But didn't you have sort of luminosity projections when you did the sigmas?
Excuse me?
Didn't you have luminosity projections when you did the original expected calculations? Do you know what I mean? Like, didn't you have an idea of, I guess not.
Well, this includes the... This includes the luminosity and so on, and it includes many, many more things in the expected rates, but this includes what we expect with this luminosity, which was used actually for the measurements. So I think this is nothing really to worry about. So
if it was just statistic. Oh, okay. I think I understand. Thank you.
Puccio.
Hi, Maximiliano Puccio from University of Torino. I have a question on the slide before.
On the slide before.
Yeah.
Now I can once go backwards,
yeah.
Okay.
That's easy. Yeah. Could you please comment on why the ATLAS systematic uncertainties for Higgs in 4 leptons is this much smaller with respect to CMS1? I wouldn't expect that difference. Is due to detector analysis?
I don't think I'm really able so you ask why is the systematic error here much smaller than that one? I mean,
yeah.
The statistics we are about at the same level.
Yeah, more or less, yeah. Statistically wise, you are always with bit bigger uncertainties, but yeah, they are compatible. But the systematic uncertainties, the one of CMS, are 3 times larger, which in 4 leptons I wouldn't expect that.
Well, so the honest answer is I don't know this detail, but what I can say is that the two groups have worked together and I think hammered out the errors when they make this joint analysis. So maybe Greg knows actually more about this detailed working group.
I can give the answer now or during my talk, but the bottom line is that Atlas went much more aggressive in systematic areas because that was the precursor for WMS measurement, and since you're completely dominated by statistical error in CMS, at this point we were not so aggressive in getting the muon momentum scale.
It's certainly a question sometimes of approaches in the systematic areas. Then there is the opposite case, for example, when we look at the systematic errors which are attributed to the top mass measurements. There I will give the same answer as Greg in this case, namely that we feel maybe it was a bit more aggressively estimated in the case of CMS, but okay, that's, I think both experiments do this to the best of their knowledge and publish the details, and that's it.
I didn't get correctly the comment about CMS uncertainties. Well, even if you are dominated by statistical uncertainties, well, the systematic uncertainties shouldn't change with statistics, right?
But what I meant is that, you know, to minimize the systematic uncertainties, you need to do a serious amount of work. So at the time when we did this publication, since we knew that we are dominated by statistical uncertainty, and by the way, you see that overall error on CMS is smaller than on Atlas because we have slightly higher efficiency for low PTE leptons, we decided not to essentially go for the best possible systematic uncertainties because it didn't matter for the final answer. Obviously, we are working on WMS measurement just like Atlas does, and these systematics would go down considerably in the future.
Okay, thank you.
Solokov?
Hello. I'm Anton Sokolov from Moscow State University. Some theories predict the appearance of the microscopic black holes at the collider, and what is the way of detecting them, and what are the results now?
Well, by the way, on the slides I have included something about that. There are several model-dependent analyses which are being done. One of the most early and popular ones is that the microscopic black holes would decay in a democratic way into leptons, into jets, and things like that. So people look, for example, for objects, for events which have many leptons, many jets, and make distributions for that, and compare this then with what one expects from the standard model. In fact, this is not so far away. We could even go and have an example of that. This is kind of the backup here. It will come. It's in the backup then. Sorry. I guess I took it in there. It's not a very efficient way to go to the back, but I should get there. Or was it in the first talk? I'm confused now because I had to reshuffle the stuff. Maybe it's in the... it's not here. Here it is. Okay. So, in one of the analyses, for example, the two examples here, this is one from CMS, is looking at the distribution of the scalar sum of objects at high PT, high transverse energy, and that is what is observed and expected from standard model, and these are model dependent now microscopic black hole models, what would be expected, and one does not see, for example, such an enhancement, and therefore one sets upper limits, which are typically in the few TeV mass range for these objects in this particular case. You see here what you would expect, for example, for a 3 TeV mass. This is this last curve, this one here. Alternatively, as I said, you have many objects in a democratic way. You could have same sign muons, for example, and that is what is shown in this distribution here from ATLAS. And again, these are typically putting the limits, as I said, model dependent, into a few TeV range.
Actually, I think I completely disagree with that statement, because I know that this is the sort of became a standard folklore, that the micro black hole should produce multi-particle decay, multi-jet, or many soft decays. But I think that is simply impossible by unitarity. In other words, you cannot produce immediately resonances that decay into many soft quanta before first producing resonances that decay in moderate number, like 2 jets. So in other words, these properties that you are mentioning, certainly they could be properties once you go above the threshold. So in other words, the picture should be like this. First you produce a first resonance, which is the first precursor of what you would then call a black hole tower. And that first resonance would be literally like an elementary particle. So we will decay into 2 jets, or I mean, like a very, 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 it would look like a very short-lived resonance. Now then, if we are incredibly lucky and you can go above the threshold, gradually you will see that you are producing resonances which are longer and longer lived and decay in many softer and softer quanta. So this would be a signal for those guys once you pass the first resonance. But the first resonance should be like an elementary particle. It cannot be, you see, it's absolutely impossible to immediately hit the first resonance which immediately decays with many soft quanta. And the reason is also okay, there are several arguments, but already from CPT, for example, and unitarity. If you can produce a black hole in two going into a black hole, the decay rate of the black hole should be the same as going to the same two. So, in other words, what we understand is that this democracy that you mentioned, it must be a transient phenomena. In other words, you should see more and more democracy with higher mass. But it cannot be that you immediately hit a particle which is immediately democratic, because simply by unitarity that's impossible. You see, because you are producing black hole, you are producing at order one rate, and then it's impossible that something that you produce at order one rate, let's say in quark anti-quark collision, decays into all the species of the standard model democratically. That cannot be. So most likely the first signature will be like an elementary particle. I know that this is in the background, but I don't know why, because every time I hear this, I try to correct, but there is no effect. So people continue to say, right.
Okay. As I said, this was, I gave this as an example of very early things. There are many other, as you know, analysis which, they are all model dependent, but
what I'm saying now is not model dependent. This follows from unitarity. Sorry, I have to insist. I cannot accept this kind of signature.
Okay.
Because this is not model dependent, what I'm saying. I'm just saying, you see, the problem is that what we call black holes is a transient notion, because the first resonance is very hard to say whether it's a black hole or an elementary particle. Of course, if you produce a heavy one, then you can say, okay, this is a black hole because it decays into many soft quanta. But the first resonance is on the verge. It's like a quantum black hole between the world of elementary particles and black holes. And that first resonance is sort of, you produce it at the Planck scale, and it has a Planck lifetime, and it's a very short-lived particle. It has to decay into, it has no time to become democratic. That's the problem. Not the problem, that's the signature. I think this is extremely important.
I have to remind you that LHC is still somewhat far off from the Planck scale.
Sorry?
So, LHC is still rather far off from the Planck scale. So,
well, you mean
there are some internal contradictions anyway.
You mean the four-dimensional Planck scale?
Well, even in higher dimensions.
How do you know? They should tell us.
Well, you would have to see all these extra dimensions.
That's how you will see them. So the signal will be a resonance that will decay into two jets.
Yeah.
One, if you don't see it, then of course you cannot say anything.
And that's the first signal would be all these towers, the Kluge-Klein towers and so on.
No, that's not obvious. Because this is a model-independent signal. Because once you hit the Planck scale, you have to produce a resonance there. Because you know that then you have to cross over into the black hole regime. That is inevitable. Yeah. Now, the Kaluza-Klein tower depends how many dimensions, whether they are weakly coupled, strongly coupled. It's a different story.
But shouldn't LHC first see those extra dimensions and then the black hole?
Not necessarily. That's what I'm saying. It may very well happen that the first signature of extra dimensions is that you hit a strongly coupled resonance at the Planck scale. Before, of course, there will be tower, but you may miss it. Because tower may be weakly coupled, you know, not so efficient. Background is very, very, very large. But this is inevitable. You see, the black holes are impossible to miss because once you hit the Planck scale, you know that you are there. This is the beauty of gravity, right? That the Planck scale is universal. The other things are model dependent. In fact, it's the other way around. All these Kaluza-Klein signals, string resonances and so on, these are model dependent. But once you hit the Planck scale, you have to see a strongly coupled resonance, which is a black hole. That's the beauty of gravity.
No, but the whole notion of Planck scale depends on your model of...
No, fundamental Planck scale, of course. I assume that if LHC can reach that, then that will be the model-independent signal.
Okay.
Right.
May I comment on that? I think you're preaching to the choir, because actually on this very plot you see the magenta line on the bottom plot, the one which is the highest.
Sorry.
This is exactly what you want. This is quantum black hole which decays in two jets. The only reason you see it in three jets, because jets come for free almost at the LHC. So you're certainly looking for quantum black holes in your understanding of the resonance.
I appreciate that. And actually, I don't want to mislead you. You guys should not listen to me. Because you are experimental.
So we don't. We look for general deviations,
yeah,
and it could be supersymmetric. It could be anything you want.
No, absolutely. You should look for everything. So you should not be... I'm just saying...
But your point is very well taken.
Right.
We're indeed looking for pairs of two objects, and even this dimuon search could be, the lepton number violating, for instance, decay of quantum black hole into positive muons, so charge violating.
Yeah, what I'm saying is that I'm making a statement which is model independent. Because the point is that if you hit the Planck scale, you should see a strongly coupled resonance decaying very energetically into stuff. Then, of course, but as I said, you should look for everything, okay? But this is the model independent prediction. Of course, for example, it may happen, I don't know, I'm not an experimentalist, it may happen that we somehow miss the first resonance, and we end up right there, of course, then you will see this multi-particle production.
Right.
But I'm saying, theoretically, the lowest lying state cannot decay into many quanta. This is simply impossible by unitarity. Yeah. This is what I'm saying.
Yeah, Gia, I can really assure you, we look for all kind of weird signatures, and we call this the exotic.
No, that's great, that's great.
So, okay, don't worry.
We should continue the discussion, sorry. We go with the next one, Savitsky. Savitsky?
Okay.
Hear me? Oh, yes, good. Okay, well, my question is regarding slide 61. In particular, about such important parameter in the standard models as top mass.
61. Poof. Okay.
Basically, this is a plot where you present all of the measurements of the top mass.
Yeah.
And it's very nice to see that all of the experiments agreed on this single plot, even about the appearance. And in particular, you can see that the D0 tends to measure something lower values. CMS and Atlas something smaller values, and CDF somewhere in the middle. But, however, all of these measurements are strongly dependent from the understanding of the jet energy scales and from the input Monte Carlo mass, which is used for the generation of the Monte Carlo. Basically, it means that all of these measurements are measuring not the pole mass, which is used by the theoreticians and used as input for the standard model, but measures Monte Carlo defined top mass. So the question is whether is it fair to compare all of these measurements in such a way, because all of the experiments are using their own Monte Carlo generators with some input parameters and with some jet energy scales properties, and in particular you can also obtain top mass defined as a pole from the inclusive cross-sections, but sensitivity there is too low. Why experiments are still relying on these jet energy scale measurements? Thanks.
Yeah. Okay, I appreciate your comment and question. In fact, the experiments also use different methods. For example, as you mentioned, the inclusive cross-section is a function of the pole, in that case of the pole mass, but the precision is less good, and that's also published. What is shown here are all indeed measurements which are essentially making templates with the Monte Carlo and comparing to the reconstructed top mass, which however is of course a broad thing because of the missing neutrinos or so. But there are certainly also measurements which are made, for example, with the cross-section to get directly to the pole mass. In fact, I would have expected in the new talent discussion today also that somebody brings this up, which mass is really used, actually, when comparing the top mass versus the Higgs mass for in the stability discussions or so. So all I can say is here, these are comparable measurements which are shown. But there are indeed also different ways which are pursued and which are published.
But still, do experiments such as ATLAS or CMS are planning to develop common Monte Carlo generator, let's say they will agree to use POHEC or MATGRAPH or whatever, and use matrix elements generated and then reconstruct it accordingly to each experiment geometry?
Well, I think we use common Monte Carlo generators. And again, as these data, in particular for the top, are also combined between the two experiments, so the expert groups are actually working together, and I think they may be not identical in the codes, of course, of the Monte Carlos, and that's also good, so you can find eventually get an estimates on systematic errors or find errors. You don't do both exactly the same thing, but I think there is a strong, in the common top working group, there is a strong, coherence and exchange between the two experiments. That's all I can say to this.
Well, thanks.
I guess, Greg, you see this the same way. Yes.
Well, we in fact did the exercise in comparing the same generator, MC and NLO, and the results actually are not dependent really on the, as long as you use modern code, this is very small part of the systematics.
Yeah.
Thank you. Dr. Tannenbaum?
Yes, could you go to slide 78? So what I particularly, notice there is you have Higgs go to mu mu, and it's the only one that's really way off,
Well, there's of course no measurement yet of it.
Well, what is the blue and the red line then?
These are
No. I see.
Systematic and theoretical.
Oh, so that answers my question. The black line is. I was wondering how come CMS didn't have a result.
No, nobody has yet measured.
No,
positively.
Nobody has seen it. Okay,
yeah,
that's the answer.
No, that's why I said this is one of the important processes why we need actually the high luminosity LHC. And with the high luminosity LHC, I showed in the first lecture, with the 3000 inverse femtobarn, we will get a signal which is above 5 sigma, but not very much above 5 sigma. So we really need the high luminosity LHC for that.
Thank you. Next question, Mr. Lee.
Yeah, yeah. I'm Kali from Shandong University and I have. So I wonder if you have some comparison between the ratios of branching ratio of Higgs decay to some channels. Since from this table, the expected and observed significance for some channels are not consistent. So I wonder if you have compared the branching ratios. I mean the ratio of branching ratios for
ratios of branching ratios.
Yes, from experimental result and the theoretical calculation.
Well, this is essentially what this shows is the, in terms of signal strength is a. Normalized to the cross section, but
yes.
Cross sections times branching ratio.
Yes.
So yes, there are in the analysis for the coupling strengths, and so there are ratios, and I'm sure Greg will show that. I have not shown that. A further, essentially, we make ratios. To the total width, because we have to do ratios because we do not actually measure with high precision the Higgs decays into invisible channels. Greg will tell you that there are constraints that it's not more than of the order of 25%.
Yeah.
But for the fits of the coupling strengths or so, one typically normalizes that to the decay widths of to the vector bosons, essentially, to the Z.
Yeah, yes, but I know the ratio is not comparable, but the ratio of branching ratios it can be compared between experimental and theoretical calculation.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And sorry, I have another very detailed question. So in the slides, you show the inclusive TT bar cross section. The inclusive TT bar cross section, I think.
I guess somewhere back.
Yes, yes, this part. So I really don't know why the error bar at 8 TeV is larger than that at 7 TeV. I don't figure it out.
Sorry, I did not understand.
I know why the error bar at 8 TeV is larger than 7 TeV. So the cross-section is higher and the luminosity is higher too. So there's no reason. I don't know why.
Well, these are early 8 TeV measurements.
But the luminosity is still larger than 7 TeV.
Yeah. That's a good question.
I don't know why.
No, okay, that's a good question. I will have to check.
Okay, thanks.
Klopotsky, I'm here. Yaroslav Klopot, Joint Institute for Nuclear Research, yeah. Dubna. A short question. When do you expect ATLAS will collect enough data to exclude a TV scale supersymmetry?
Well, depends. You have to specify the model. If you take the simple models, yeah, then it's already
for
done.
Example, minimal supersymmetric model, yes, and 5 sigma, for example. Do you have such estimations?
I showed in the previous lecture of course, model dependent. This what is needed. So I don't think one can give a simple answer to that. There are, if you look at the third generation supersymmetric particles, and for example, if they are very close to the kinematic limits or so, then I think it will go quite in some of the decay chains. Then you need quite a lot. This is quite difficult. If you take the simple first and second generation decays, the classical decays where you just have a few jets plus missing ET, there already we have exclusions larger than one TV. In fact, if you take the most favorable point, it's already with equal quark and gluino masses, then it's the most favorable point is at 1.7 TV already. But this is a model which I think is not favored by our theory colleagues at all.
Okay, thank you.
Well, then I want to thank Professor Jenny for some beautiful lectures and very nice discussions.